welcome. My name is Julian Schlossberg, and the name of our show is Movie Talk. My guest this week is an international singing star who has won 2 Grammy Awards. And I want you to know she's also a songwriter, an author, and a fine actress. She's been plying her trade for over 8 decades, and she has sold over 100 million records. I am so pleased. I'm so proud to present today on Movie Talk the fabulous Miss Betula Clark.
Hello. That's quite a buildup.
Well, should I say goodbye now? Just stop it?
Well, I'm at a loss for words here.
What can we say after that?
Listen, I'm delighted to be talking to you. I haven't been to New York for a long time. And here in Geneva, I'm talking to you from Geneva. It's desperately hot. We're in the middle of a huge heat wave here. So if I'm perspiring a little, glowing, as they say.
We'll understand. We'll understand. Well, in your fabulous memoir, which is known as Is That You, Petula, you take us back to your childhood initially. And I wanted to ask you, if since both your mom and dad were nurses, was your first desire to be a nurse as well?
Well, for starters, I did not want to write this book. I was somewhat heavily nudged into it. And now that I've done it, I'm sort of quite pleased, I think. Wait a minute, I've got to... This looks like an ad of one kind. This is the hardback version. And it's called, Is That You, Petula? It's a quote from John Lennon. The first time he met me, I was standing in the doorway of his hotel, dripping with rainwater and mascara running down my face. And he looked up and he said, Is that you, Petula? Yes, you know, as only he could say it. And that's where the title comes from. And the book is really just a lot of experiences. I haven't told everything, you know. I'm sure you've got a good book in you.
Well, I've actually written 2.
Well, you know, but I could certainly write another book and it would be completely different to this one. But it's not bad. It's not bad.
Oh, I think it's terrific. I wanted to say that we have to explain to the audience how come you're in John's hotel room dripping from mascara. We should set the scene. You're in Montreal and she's in the bed with John, Yoko Ono, and the room is filled with lots of people. But why are you there?
It's a long story. I was performing in Montreal. I was doing a series of concerts there. And the first time I sang in Montreal, they booked me as a French performer because, you know, I lived in Paris and made a lot of hit records in French, done French television. So in Montreal, I was known as a French performer. So the first time I sang there, I did a series of concerts, one-woman show, entirely in French. And then a couple of years later, I don't know exactly, I had a hit song called Downtown, which was followed by I Know a Place and Don't Sleep in the Subway and My Love, all those hits, which were also hits in Canada. So when they asked me to go back to sing in Montreal, I thought, oh, I can do a bilingual show. Songs in French, songs in English, you know. Wrong. Because it was just at the moment, which nobody had told me about, politically, it was when, you know, everything had to be in French. So when I did my concert, when I was singing in French, the English-speaking people saying, in English, you're English, aren't you? You know. And when I sang in English, en français, it was like an open war. And it was very unpleasant and very difficult. And I was in tears every night at the end of the show. And I thought, what am I going to do about this? And I had heard that John Lennon was in town. I didn't know John Lennon. I never met him. was a fan, of course. So I thought, maybe if I have a word with him, he'll have some advice for me. So I left the theater, still with my makeup on. It was pouring with rain. I ran to his hotel, which wasn't very far away, but I was drenched when I arrived. And the concierge said, I don't know why he recognized me, he said, ah, bonsoir, madame. I said, I want to see John Lennon. He said, well, he's just up there, you know. He told me what floor, so I went up in the elevator. And the door was sort of half open. I sort of opened it and stood there, drenched. And there was John Lennon and Yoko in bed. Now, they were doing a thing called a bed-in. I don't know if any of you listeners remember that. It was bed-in for peace. Anyway, there they were in their 90s, perfectly respectable, in bed. And I was standing at the doorway, dripping water. It was that one weird thing, you know. I was looking at them. They were looking at me. And eventually, John sort of had his little glasses on. And he said, is that you, Petula? And I went, yes. And he said, come on, you come and let me give you a hug. And still dripping water, I went and had a hug. Somebody gave me a towel. And I explained this whole story about the French and the English, about the problem I was having with it. And he listened, and now I don't know if I can tell you this.
You can.
I said, what am I going to do, John? And he thought for a moment, and he said, oh, fuck 'em.
Yes, you can tell us, you wrote it.
So but I said, yes. Anyway,
I was going to say, now we know how come you're part of all we are saying is give peace a chance.
Yes.
Now we know why you're there and how you got there.
It's because he said, you need a drink. Go and have a drink. They were in a suite. Go in the living room and have a glass of wine. So I went in there. Somebody gave me a glass, and there were one or two people I knew. And they started playing this music on the system, very simple music. And then somebody handed us some lyric sheets, you know, and looked at this, and it was, all we are saying is give peace a chance. And we were all singing this. And little did I know, none of us knew that we were being recorded. And that's how I and many, many other people finished up on John's record of Give Peace a Chance.
Yes.
The long story for the
situation. It's a long story, and sadly for you, you've had to tell it so many times.
There's no other way of telling it, I'm afraid.
But my plan is to try to find a few things you've never spoken about. That's my plan, if I can. So I want to go back to the original question when we both were younger, which was, your folks were both nurses. As a little girl, did you want to be a nurse initially?
Oh, I was always a very musical little girl. My mother was Welsh, and the Welsh people are musicians. They sing.
Beautiful voices.
They sing, you know. Tom Jones as well, Shirley Bassey, you know. And anyway, but I used to sing all the time. And my dad worked nights. He was a night nurse. And so in the daytime, he would try to sleep. And I was singing around the house all the time, you know. And he shouted down to my mum, he said, could you switch that radio off? And my mum said, it's not the radio, it's Pet, Petula Pet. And my father had always wanted to be an actor. He was a frustrated actor. He was a very good-looking man. But he was never allowed to do it because, you know, it's not the thing that a young man did. So I think, you know, when he realized that he had a child who had some talent, you know, that he sort of encouraged me. We had no influence. We had no money. So little by little, sort of, he was in the army too, so I started singing for the troops. And that was how I started singing professionally, if you like. I wasn't paid, you know, but I enjoyed it. And there was another little girl. We used to travel around together on troop trains to sing for the forces. And her name was and still is Julie Andrews.
Yes. The two of you made these tours on the troop trains, as you said.
Yeah.
I think your dad, if I remember the book, and I think I do, your dad ran away to be in a theater troupe as a young boy.
Oh, well, he ran away from home to join a theatrical company, you know, and he didn't get very far, and he was dragged back by his parents, you know. Our son, I'm not going to do that sort of, and that was it. You know, he was a frustrated performer.
Now, what your mom sounds so kind and so loving as a mother. What was her influences besides singing? Obviously, she had a beautiful voice as well.
Yes, but she was very shy. I mean, she never sang in public, but she had a wonderful sort of mezzo soprano voice. And I used to listen to her singing, and I learned how to breathe, because, you know, that's what singing is all about, and it's just breath, really. But she wasn't interested in show business at all.
And her influence on you, though, beyond anything beyond singing? Because let me say this to you. In the business, you have a reputation of being so kind, and that's a really gift. And that sounds like your mom could have taught some of that to you.
Listen, why not be kind? You know, what's the life is too short. I mean, yeah, sometimes I lose it, but not for very long. But, you know, people in general are nice, you know, and if they're nice to me, why shouldn't I be nice to them? You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean, but you'll know what I mean when I say everyone's not like that.
Well, you know. But, you know, they have their problems, you know. It's difficult to be kind all the time, but I do my best.
Well, I wanted to say that you skipped over a couple of, I think, very important points that I want to bring out just quickly. Bendel's department store, as you go in with your dad to shop, and there's an orchestra playing. Now, this is interesting to me, Petula. You start out telling me you're a shy kid. But all of a sudden, when there's music around, I think everything goes out the window and you have unbelievable stage presence to sing.
I'm still actually fairly shy. I'm doing my best not to be too shy with you. But I really lose all that when I'm on stage. When I start singing, I wrote a song about this. How does it start now? I've been getting high on the music ever since I was so high. That's the way it's going to stay until the day I die. Fame and fortune never meant that much to me anyway. But when the band starts to play, people, I'm on my way. And that is the truth. You know, there's something about being on stage, feeling that warmth of an audience and feeling the strength of that band, the music, and something happens inside of me. That's what it's all about. I think most performers will probably tell you the same thing.
They have. But I don't know too many who started out as young as you and Julie Andrews did. That's for sure. But interestingly enough, your initial love, I think, was acting more than singing. Is that true?
Well, I don't know. For me, acting and singing is sort of the same thing, really. You're just using what you've got inside you to express something. I became a bit of a star in England as a child performer on the BBC, singing. And then somebody thought, oh, yes, let's put her in a movie. And I made my first film. And it was a strange experience because, you know, there was no audience. You don't have that wonderful thing coming back from an audience. You're just in this kind of strange room, you know, with a few lights on and a few people, a microphone. It was not what I had expected. You know, I used to love going to the movies. I loved all that glamour and everything, the color. But when you're actually doing it, it doesn't feel like that. But I soon realized that acting, working with other people who were actors, there was another feeling which pleased me a lot. Yes, I do. I do enjoy acting. I still do.
You're sensational, in my opinion, at it. And we'll get to Sunset Boulevard a little while away. But to watch you on Sunset Boulevard, I never, ever expected that kind of performance. I guess I'm jumping. What can I do, Petula? I'll just jump.
Well, you know, let's face it.
Let's say this. Let's just go to this, because it's such a, it meant so much to me to watch you do it. I want to talk about the fact that Trevor Nunn calls you to consider coming in and taking over as Norma Desmond. And you want to take it from there?
Well, then I didn't want to play Norma Desmond. I had seen it in New York, and I thought it was a magnificent production, but I wasn't very moved by it. And I thought I didn't like anybody in it. You know, she's not very nice. Then, you know, the main character, and he, the guy, you know, was a bit of a, you know, not very nice. And I didn't want to do it. So when I was asked to do it, I thought, how do I get out of this, you know? So I went to the really useful offices in London, and there was Trevor Nunn, who is the great stage director, you know. It was just the two of us in this room, and I was determined not to do it, and he was determined that I was going to do it. So we spent an hour together. You know, I said, but I've never played anyone like this before. You know, I'm a nice person. She's not a nice person. You know, she's really not very nice. He said, darling, you're a wonderful actress. Of course you can do it. I said, how do you know that? He said, I know, believe me. I'm not going to argue with Trevor Nunn, you know. I said, wouldn't you like me to sing one of the songs? He said, good God, no. I said, how do you know I can sing this music? It's very different to what I do. He said, you can do what you like. And certainly what I want you to do is play it exactly the way you feel it. And so I did. I didn't like the character at first. But little by little, I started understanding her. And when you start understanding somebody, something else happens. And by the time I'd finished playing her, because I'd played her for over a year in London and then on tour in the States for over a year, I really liked her. And when I stopped playing her, I really missed her. you know, that's the funny thing about acting. And I learned a lot from doing Sunset Boulevard.
Humor, he said, you will add humor. You will add vulnerability. And it had not been played that way. It had been played by a crazy person who not nice.
Yes, that's absolutely true. Because I said to Trevor, well, what do you... I said, you know, I can't play this mad, unpleasant woman. He said, you play it your way. I said, well, what do you think? What do you think I will bring to this role? He said, you'll bring humor and vulnerability. And I think that's probably true.
You certainly did. And on the web, people listening, you type this in and you'll hear with one look and it'll just kill you. Just kill you. It was so beautifully done. And you know, I swear, I don't know how you did it. It's almost frightening. At times, I thought it was Gloria Swanson. I couldn't believe that. You had this incredible ability to portray the vulnerability that he saw, but also you still had strength in that role. It's a very interesting combination. And we should say 500 performances in London, 255 on the road. I mean, the time you got through, I'm surprised you didn't turn into this woman.
Well, I remember Glenn Close said to me when she was playing at New York, and I went to see her, and I was in her dressing room, and she said, I guess they're going to ask you to do this, Petula. I said, well, I hope not. I really meant it. I hope not. And she said, if you do, she said, don't play it more than 6 months. for 8 months. I said, why? She said, because you'll go mad. I think I know what she meant. But the funny thing is, when I do concerts now, I do sing With One Look from Sunset Boulevard. And every time I sing it, I feel her. I feel this crazy person inside me. It's a funny kind of, it gets the computer inside you, says, ah, yes, we know this.
Well, I think anyone who knows your career knows that you have such a distinctive sound. Your sound is so special, but you're an actress singer. You're not just a singer. And I think whether it's Sinatra or Judy Garland or Barbara Streisand, the finest singers can act well. And that's what you've been able to do throughout your career, starting in Bendel's department store.
Well, you know, as I said, you know, acting and singing are sort of the same thing for me. And I can't explain how it works. I don't really know myself how it works, but that's what happens.
Yes.
And each song, you know, of course, obviously I sing Downtown and I sing Don't Sleep in the Subway and I sing many other songs. And I go to a different place in each song. And I don't even have to work on it. It just happens.
Well, you had said around 12 years old, you go to Lelstree Studios and for your first movie, as you said, Medal for a General. And it's a dark place. It's a scary place. It's not, not what you were used to. But it was very interesting to know that you then sign a deal with J. Arthur Rank, who, of course, at that time is the largest film producers in England. And what's so amazing on that to me is that you end up in some movies that still really mean something today. Anybody who knows film knows the Michael Powell, I Know Where I'm Going, for example.
Yeah. And
A man made Red Shoes. He made the Colonel Blimp movie. He also did a wonderful film that they went crazy against, Peeping Tom. But more importantly, you were afraid of him initially, right?
Well, you know, I Know Where I'm Going. I was just thinking. We made that in Denham Studios, and it was a very dark set. We were supposed to be in a castle in Scotland. Of course, we never went to Scotland. And I was playing this rather snobby little girl. It was quite fun, actually. I'd never played a snobby little girl before. And it was directed by Michael Powell, who is an iconic name now. All the great American directors sort of swear by him. But I found him really difficult. I thought he was unkind. Well, he was rude. He was a difficult man. And I was scared of him. And I was so scared. I was wearing joggers for this particular scene. And I needed to go to the toilet. I wanted to go wee-wees, pee-pee. And I was too scared to ask. I mean, you know, and so I waited until lunchtime on a break. And by then, I had done pee-pee in my jodhpurs. So I sort of sidled out of off the set and into my dressing room and put my jodhpurs on the radiator. but, you know, he was a scary person. And of course, I was a child. You know, I didn't quite understand things. But it's, you know, making movies is very different from working on stage. You know, I enjoy it. I enjoy doing plays too on stage, without music. I like that feeling of contact with other actors. It's great fun.
Did you, if you look back on your childhood, do you feel that you missed things because of your career?
Well, I didn't know anything else, of course. You know, childhood is a very special time for any of us. It was, don't forget, there was a war going on too. And we were being bombed. We were living in air raid shelters. When I wasn't in the studio, I didn't go to school much because I was working. So I had a very unusual childhood, and I didn't have many friends, that's true. Because, you know, how was I going to make friends? And when I did go to school, the girls, because I was going to a girls' school, rather upmarket girls' school, and they were sort of a bit like that. And they say, oh, yes, you're a star, but you don't know how to do your algebra, you know, which was true. I still don't know how to do algebra.
It's not really called for in today's world.
So, you know, I was hopeless at school. So I was a bit out of tune with other children, you know, that's the way it was.
And not only that, you're going through adolescence, which at anybody's time, adolescence is a tough time. And
yes.
On top of that, you had this. So that's why I asked the question, and that's why I got the answer. So let's get back to the movies a little bit and the films you've done. Rank finally makes this big color musical. This is after the war, and it's called London Town.
Oh.
And in it is the beautiful Kay Kendall and two-ton Tessie O'Shea.
Yes.
Took a kind of liking to you.
Well, yes. Well, she was a sort of like a comic singer, a bit sort of like that. She was very fat, and she was from the north of England. She talked like that, you know. And yes. So one day she on the set, she took me on her knee, which was a very plump knee, and decided to tell me the facts of life, which was quite alarming, really. Fortunately, I didn't really understand what she was talking about. It took me a long time before I understood the facts of life. I'm still learning.
I was going to say, I'm like you. I'm still a student.
Yes, still groping a bit.
I did want to say that I saw Tessie O'Shea on Broadway in a musical called The Robber Bridegroom. This woman came on that set. I tell you, talk about taking over the stage. She waddled on, but she took over. That was she was.
Was she playing a ukulele?
I don't think so. But I'm going back to the Punic Wars, so it was so long ago. But I did. I was so excited that you had worked with her, and I saw that. Now we're going to get to a wonderful fellow who I met and spent time with, and I know was a close friend of yours, and that's Peter Ustinov. And the wonderful movie that you guys made with Vice Versa, and the kind of a guy you fell in love with on the set.
Oh, yes. Oh, dear. Yes, well, Peter Ustinov was a very young film director. I mean, and he was slightly mad, and I absolutely adored him. And Laurence Olivier was making Hamlet in the same studio, and there were signs outside the set saying, no visitors, this means you know. And so Ustinov put signs outside our set saying, visitors welcome, come on in. There was always a piano on the set, and he was very musical. And I did fall in love with the leading man, who was a young man, same age as me, called Anthony Newley. And he was very funny, very talented, and I thought he was absolutely dishy. And unfortunately for me, he was more interested in Diana Dawes and, you know, the rather glamorous people. Let's face it, he was married to Joan Collins for a while. So he was never going to look at me. But yeah, that was a very interesting moment in my life. And I got to know Ustinov many years later. I got to know him well because we both used to do work for the United Nations. here in Geneva, and he lived very close to here. And we used to spend evenings together over dinner, laughing, and he was very funny, very intelligent, and very musical. So he was an exceptional man, P.D. Usanov.
He was. He could write, and he did. He could act, he did. And yeah. I have never heard a man who could do more voices and sound effects.
He would do
sound effects for me, and I would be, yeah. Tears would be coming down. I'm telling you, he was just an extraordinary talent.
Yeah. He was brilliant. He was a brilliant actor, too.
A brilliant actor, and warm and kind, et cetera, et cetera. So that's nice. That's nice. Now, you talk about Anthony Newley, but earlier you talked about the importance of breathing when you're singing. And
yes.
I think a few years later, you're in a studio while Anthony Newley is recording.
Well, he wasn't a singer, but, you know, when we used to go out on doing sort of personal appearances to sort of promote the movies that we were in, Tony and I, we used to go on stage and in the cinema, and, you know, everybody knew I could sing, and he would sing along with me, you know, and he kind of got a taste for it. So he decided that he wanted to try to sing. So he said, I'm going to make a record. I said, well, good. So he said, will you come into the studio with me? I said, well, sure. So I was literally there standing next to him, tapping him on the shoulder when he had to breathe, because he didn't know anything about singing at that point. But of course, we all know he became a very good singer. And, you know, everybody imitated Anthony Newley, you know. He was a dear friend. And
years later, you performed with him in Las Vegas.
Yes, I did. Yes, that was great. That was great.
It was a long friendship, and that's nice when that happens. Well, we have to explain to the audience that you're this child star. You're making movies, and Rank finally gives you're just kind of going along the way anybody who's young or even older is with a company. And then they give you a script, and you decide, I don't want to do this. I just don't want to do this. And by God, I don't know how you had the nerve, but you turned it down, and they suspended you.
Yes.
This must have been, first of all, your father must have been quite upset, because when they suspend you, the money you're getting every week is gone.
Yes, you're absolutely right, yes. You know a lot about money, don't you?
I read that book, and I'm going to tell people who
right.
they have to get Is That You, Petula? If you want to read, no matter how long we do this interview, I'll never be able to get into all the notes I took on this book. So, yes, let's get back.
There's a lot of stuff in this book, I must say.
It's rich.
Yes, they dropped me. The studio dropped me, because I didn't want to do yet another kind of silly, kind of uninteresting role. And at that time, there weren't many really interesting roles for young women. Most of the good roles were for men at that time, and so they dropped me. But you know, it didn't really bother me because I was a singer too. You know, so I could go out and do concerts and I didn't need to be an actress. So, I was fortunate in that way. But, you know, I was watching a whole thing on Marilyn Monroe recently. You know, they dropped her too, you know. So I'm in pretty good company. It happens, you know.
You were in great company because Betty Davis did it with Jack Warner. Olivia de Havilland did it with Jack Warner. You were in good company, but you might not have known at that time that you were, you know.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay, White Corridors, which always interests me that both your parents were nurses, and now you're doing a movie, White Corridors. And I'm wondering, were you able to do that, or had you settled with Rank? How were you able to do that movie?
Well, you know, I was under contract. So, you know, was you'd get the phone call on the Friday saying, we want Petula, get here on Monday. And I'd go along and the script would be there, you know, for the first time. And I thought it was actually a very good role. And it turned out to be a very good movie, but it was totally different to anything I'd done before. And I was pleased about it.
And you could also be pleased with the fact that you were nominated for a BAFTA award for that movie.
Yes, yes, I'd forgotten about that, yes.
Well, that's why I'm here.
Yes. But it was great to be doing something a little bit different. You know, I was always hoping to do something different. I still am, actually. I always feel that there must be something else that I can do. And you know, I've been criticized for it because there are people say, oh, well, you know, we like you for this and we like you for that. Don't change things. Well, you know, if I feel the need for it, then I got to try. I have to try.
Well, let's talk about the fact that you can sing in English, of course, in French, in Italian, in German, in Spanish, in Gaelic. I mean, you've done just in the singing area, you've graduated with a PhD. So my feeling is that you say there are other things to do, and I'm sure there are, but if you sit back, and as I have for the last 3 days, and go over your career, it's extraordinary. I mean, we haven't even hit the stage yet, except for Sunset Boulevard. We haven't hit nightclubs or Vegas or both, to tell you. Yeah. We haven't even gotten into working with gigantic movie stars in studio movies. In fact, I think we're going to go there. Let's go. You have not made a movie for 10 years, and they come to you to do a movie, and you have to give it some thought, but maybe not much. And it's called Finian's Rainbow with some young kid who's directing.
Yes. Oh, I have to tell you, making that movie was one of the happiest moments in my life, of my career and of my life. I was in LA for about 6 months doing the movie. I was making a lot of records as well, working with the best musicians, the best people, meeting marvelous people, and making Finian's Rainbow with Francis Coppola directing. And my leading man was Fred Astaire. So, you know, it was happiness. It really was.
It doesn't get much better than that. And no. I let's talk about working with his choreographer, one of the great ones, Hermes Pan. You're working with him to kind of be able to at least keep up a little with Fred Astaire.
Well, let's face it, they weren't exactly complicated routines. I wasn't a Ginger Rogers, you know. But
no.
I still had to learn how to do it. And Hermes Pan had been choreographer for Fred for many, many years. In fact, he even looked a bit like Fred.
Did.
And I loved working with him. But, of course, when I actually got to dance with Fred, that was something different, you know. And I loved Fred. He was so kind, and he was a perfectionist to a point of he wasn't just a snob, but he didn't like anything that was mediocre. And so we got along very well, and I loved his singing voice. I used to get him to sing for me, and then he would get me to sing for him. So we used to have these wonderful sessions of, you know, just having fun.
And it's amazing when you get some composer like Irving Berlin and you say to Mr. Berlin, who was the greatest interpreter, singer of your song? And you know you're going to think it's this guy. It was Fred Astaire.
Yes, that doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, I
love Fred's voice.
And that's it did surprise me because I expected to hear Al Jolson or Judy Garland, whatever. But Fred
was... Tony Bennett.
Tony Bennett. That's right. Anyhow, you're doing that and you're in a car, I believe. You're in a car driving in a field with Francis Coppola. And all of a sudden, he asked the driver to stop and go into the field with you and Fred. Well,
the thing is that we had sort of dumped the Warner Brothers team, the crew, back in a little place called Petaluma. And because Francis didn't want any of that stuff. He just wanted us to go out and film. And he was filming it himself, you know, on camera on his shoulder.
He was the cameraman.
So it was Fred, Francis, and me, and the driver. So we go off into the countryside, and Fred is a bit sort of puzzled by all this, you know. And anyway, Francis says, "No, stop. That's a great-looking field." And we get out. So we get out, and Francis would say to Fred, "Go and dance through that field." And Fred was on. You have to get over a fence for a start. And Fred Astaire does not get over a fence. I'm not going in there. You know, that's against the law or something like that. Fred was very, very law-abiding, you know. And Francis says, "Nobody's looking. Go on, get in." So I nudged Fred into doing it because it seemed to be like a good idea. So, and there he goes. And Fred was saying, "But there are rabbit holes in here and cow dung and stuff, you know." Travis would say, don't worry about it. Just keep dancing, you know.
That's amazing that Fred did it. It really is amazing he did it.
He did it. And yeah. I think he had such a good time. That was a wonderful day, the three of us together in that car, driving through the Napa Valley and all that kind of. It was like a dream.
Well, I can understand why you said it's one of the highlights of your life, that how much you loved it. Yeah.
I was doing a lot of recording in LA, and I was working with such wonderful people, and the Warner Brothers team were wonderful. I don't know. I was just happy, you know.
Well, while you're doing that, MGM is developing Goodbye, Mr. Chips.
Yes.
And they have an interesting cast. They have Lee Remick and they have Richard Burton. And, okay, well, Lee Remick decides she's not going to do it. She doesn't want to. And the MGM people ask the Warner Brother people to show them a few rushes of Finian's Rainbow. And they see Petula Clark and they're quite impressed. So they want you to do it. Richard Burton says, I don't want to co-star with a pop singer.
I thought that was a bit rude.
Yeah, I would say, especially he should have known that you're Welsh as well as he is.
So exactly.
Fool that he was. But anyhow, off you go. You have to now meet who they now have replaced Burton with, the fabulous Peter O'Toole, and he wants to meet you. So let's talk about that meeting in Dublin.
Well, I think he was finishing, Lion in Winter, would that be? Maybe?
Yes, he was. He was.
Yeah, he was in Ireland. So anyway, I go off to Dublin, which I love, incidentally. I love the Irish. And I meet Peter, and we get along like a house on fire. And we have dinner, and then we went out and had a few drinks, you know, with Peter O'Toole, basically. So. Yeah. So we find ourselves in a pub, of course, in Dublin. And, of course, word gets out, "Oh, Peter's in town," you know. So suddenly the place was crowded with these real characters, real Irish characters. And it turned into a party, which it often did when I was with Peter. You couldn't go out with Peter without it turning into a party and a few drinks.
Well, he also found out about pickled onions, your love.
Yeah.
I thought that was great.
Yeah.
One of the things that interested me about, well, there's so many things in your book that interest me, but one of the things was that part of this movie, you go to Pompeii and you visit there and you write in the book that archaeology has always been something you're interested in. And you said, in another life, you might have been or considered being an archaeologist.
I don't know about in another life, but I certainly was always interested in in archaeology. And of course, Peter loved it too. And so we found ourselves in Pompeii. And when you're making a film with MGM, somewhere like Pompeii, they just closed Pompeii for us. So Peter and I were in paradise. And we were wandering around. And I can tell you now, Peter was trying to steal a little piece of a little souvenir from Pompeii. And and he would be moving this thing around so that he didn't think anybody would notice. And I said, you're not going to get away with that, Peter. That, you know, you're not. But he had a darn good try. But he did finish up with some interesting bits and pieces from that part of Italy, which were quite wonderful. And we put them in the back of our, we had a Rolls Royce, and we were, Claude, my husband, was driving the car, and Peter was sitting beside him, and I was in the back. And we were stopped by the Italian authorities, you know, at the frontier. And he said, who, you know, passport was this? And Claude said, this is Peter O'Toole, because Peter was totally, he was asleep, you know. And the guy looks at him and says, what? What do you mean? Did Peter O'Toole? Did have no idea. Lawrence of Arabia. Oh. Right, he let us through.
They let Peter through, and I'm afraid we're through too. But we'll be back next week with Petula Clark, Part 2. Hope you'll join.
Thanks for joining us on Julian Schlossberg's Movie Talk. Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Adavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world with content production that powers your growth. Podcasts, audiobooks, and everything in between. Learn more at adavita.com.
Produced by Adavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.